We'll resume our 3 o'clock time certain. Carla, could you please read item 939?
Mm-hmm. Appeal of Woodstock Neighborhood Association against hearing officer's decision to approve a zone change in conformance with the comprehensive plan and a 3-lot division at 3936 Southeast Reedway Street, LU 13237078, ZCLDP.
Okay, this hearing is on the record, and I'd ask Lindley Reese to please describe the hearing and how it will be conducted.
Well, this is an evident or on the record hearing. It means you must limit your testimony to materials and issues in the record. I'll first discuss the order of testimony. We'll begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for 10 minutes. Following the staff report, council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present their case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next and will each have 3 minutes to speak to council. The principal opponent, in this case the applicant, will then have 15 minutes to address City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. The council will then move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal after supporters of the appeal conclude their testimony. After the principal opponent, council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, they will each have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a tentative vote on the appeal. When council takes a tentative vote, it will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If council decides to take a final vote today, that would conclude the matter before council. There are several guidelines for those who will be addressing council today. First, the evidentiary record is closed. The hearing is to decide only if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted there. If your argument includes new evidence or new issues, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. The council will not consider the new information, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. Second, we have objections to new evidence. If you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument relying on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument. And finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to council. If you believe another person has raised issues today not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to council's consideration of that issue. And then finally, one note for the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If they fail to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court.
Okay, thank you, Lindley. Do any members of council have any ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of the hearing to declare? Okay, seeing no one. Do any council members have any questions or other preliminary matters that need to be addressed before we begin the hearing?
Just one thing, Mr. President. We had a hearing last week. Was a similar hearing in terms of on the record, and there was an admonishment about not bringing new matters in. And a couple of times, people who testified did attempt to bring things in. Now, we're not the best parties in a position to make that call. So I would just encourage counsel or the Bureau or staff, if something comes up, just to be forceful in bringing that to the attention of the president, because otherwise it may be something we would otherwise miss if we're not as familiar with the underlying record.
So perhaps a question ahead of time is, would you prefer that to be brought to your attention immediately while someone's testifying or at the conclusion of someone's testimony?
I would say you should do it immediately.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
And I have a question about the city attorney's comment about the challenging of the constitutionality of conditions of approval. I haven't heard that before. Is there a suggestion that the applicant is challenging any of the conditions?
There is not. It's a state law requirement so that we can cut off any potential challenges to conditions of approval. So it's in our standard
I haven't ever paid attention to that particular element.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Mr. President, I also need to note that I have to leave at 4 to represent the city at the Future Connect Scholarship Awards. I apologize for that.
Okay, great. Okay, let's begin with the staff report.
Good afternoon, members of council. My name is Rachel Whiteside, and I am the assigned Bureau Development Services Planner who will be presenting the hearings officer decision for this land use case. The purpose of this proceeding is to hear the appeal by the Woodstock Neighborhood Association of the hearings officer decision for the approval of a zone change in conformance with the comprehensive plan from R5 to R2.5 and concurrent land division proposal to create 3 lots for the property at 3936 Southeast Reedway. A request for a base zone change in conformance with the comprehensive plan is subject to the Type 3 process and the approval criteria in PCC 33.855.050. A land division request must meet the approval criteria in 33.660.120. On its own, this land division proposal would not be subject to an appeal before City Council. It's because it's part of the overall Type 3 process. The Woodstock Neighborhood Association appealed the decision to approve the land division based on failure to meet the land division criterias A and I. Criterion A is the lot criterion, and there are 2 purpose statements in Chapter 33.611 that come into play for the R2.5 zone. The Neighborhood Association believes that the proposal fails to meet both purpose statements and that the narrow lots, that is, lots that are less than 36 feet wide, are not similar to or compatible with the surrounding lots. Building on their objection to the narrow lots, the appellant also cited criterion I, which is the solar access criterion, indicating that the resulting lots will not provide adequate solar access to adjacent properties. The appellant did not cite any of the zone change criteria, therefore they will not be discussed in this presentation. Here's the zoning map, and as noted, the current zoning is R5, and the comprehensive plan designation is R2.5. You'll see the R2.5 comp plan designation is fairly consistently applied along the blocks adjacent to arterials, such as Woodstock and Cesar Chavez Boulevards. For frame of reference, the site is a corner lot with frontage on both Southeast Reedway Street to the north and Southeast 40th Avenue to the east. The house is proposed to remain, but the garage and in-ground pool will be removed to accommodate future development. The applicant is proposing 3 parcels. Parcels 2 and 3 are narrower than the minimum width for the R2.5 zone, as shown on the table here. The zoning code, however, allows narrower lots if the future development can meet the regulations of Section 33.611.200C2, commonly referred to as the narrow lot criteria. The first of these criteria require that, quote, on balance, the proposed lots will have dimensions that are consistent with the purpose of the section. The section purpose contains 9 statements, only one of which is in question here. And that is that, quote, lots are compatible with existing lots, while also considering the purpose of this chapter, the purpose of the chapter referring to Chapter 33.611, lots in the R2.5 zone. The chapter purpose statement allows for variation in lot size and shape, provided that the planned intensity of the zone is respected. Regarding the chapter purpose statement, staff found that the planned intensity of the zone is 4 units for a 10,000 square foot site, and the applicant is proposing 3 units. Therefore, the planned intensity is being respected. The code must provide flexibility for lot dimensions because it is not possible to redevelop a standard 100 by 100 lot to the intended density and still meet the standard lot dimensions, notably lot width, even when the site is vacant. Staff also noted that keeping the existing house precludes any redevelopment that can meet minimum lot width, even under the current R5 zoning. Regarding the compatibility requirement, the hearings officer turned to the dictionary definition because the term is not defined in Chapter 33.920, which is the definitions chapter of the zoning code. Webster's defined compatible as, quote, capable of existing together without discord or disharmony. The hearings officer went on to determine that the dictionary definition does not require that lots be, quote, identical, similar, or consistent with surrounding lots, stating that if that was the intent, then the purpose statement would so read, per ORS 174.010. He also found the opponent's objection to be largely aesthetic and that meeting the compatibility purpose statement does not require that the proposal is necessarily the, quote, best option. With regards to the solar access criteria, staff found that parcels 1 and 2 are on the south side of an east-west oriented street, and parcel 2 should be less wide, and it is. Parcel 3 is the only lot oriented towards a north-south street, so there is no preference. The diagram on the corner of this slide is from Chapter 33.639, the solar access chapter. The hearings officer agreed with staff findings and testimony that the solar access standards or criteria are prescriptive. He concluded that the criteria do not impose a generalized prohibition on certain lot configurations or forbid future development from casting shade onto adjacent properties. And I've included the diagram here because you can see the lots that would cast shadow are going to be those on the south and the west. In this case, proposed parcels 2 and 3 are going to be north of or east of existing development and therefore will not be in a position to cast shadows on those properties. As part of his decision, the hearings officer included conditions of approval for the land division included on the list here. Specifically, I want to call your attention to condition C8, which restricts an attached garage for future development. The condition as written fails to identify which parcel it applies to, though the findings on page 14 of the land use decision indicate that it applies to parcel 3. I would recommend that council consider clarifying which parcel this condition affects if they choose to uphold the land use decision. Which brings me to the alternatives before council today, which be to deny the appeal by the Woodstock Neighborhood Association and thereby uphold the hearings officer decision for approval of the proposal, or uphold the appeal, thereby overturning the hearings officer decision. Council may overturn just the land division application or the entire proposal. So this concludes my presentation. I can answer questions now or following the remaining testimony.
Well, you answered one of my questions about the which lot should not have a garage. Could you just clarify why should it not have a garage?
It should not have an attached garage because the lot is not wide enough to accommodate a house that exceeds 22 feet in width. So an attached garage is only allowed on a house which orients towards the street and has a facade that's at least 22 feet wide.
So it wouldn't fit anyway. Why do we need a condition that says you can't have one?
It's to comply with the code standards.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. So we'll now hear from the appellant, the Woodstock Neighborhood Association. We have representatives. Hello.
Hello.
Those are for us. You can give those to Carla.
Okay. But can you give them to council members? Thank you.
And everything you're giving us is part of the record?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So if you could just give us your name, and then you have 10 minutes.
I won't take that.
Okay.
All right, members of the council, my name is Terry Griffiths. I guess I'm supposed to say where I live.
I don't have to say that.
All right. I live in the Woodstock neighborhood, and I'm the co-chair of the Woodstock Neighborhood Association Land Use Committee. Most of our objections to the proposed petition at 3936 Southeast Reedway have to do with the compatibility of the proposed development with the existing character of the surrounding neighborhood. You are undoubtedly aware that the issue of compatibility is a foremost cause for neighborhood ire toward recent infill development. As I listen to neighborhood voices, there are two major complaints related to compatibility that I hear. One is that many of the new houses being built are vastly out of scale with existing neighborhood development. I have heard more than one reference to, quote, that monster house. A second and related cause for criticism, and we believe this is important, is that by building up to the maximum allowed height and to the edge of the required setbacks, developers are leaving virtually no garden space for the homes they are building and are impinging on needed solar access for neighboring yards and garden plots as well. In the case of this proposal, the existing house is to remain, but two new lots are to be squeezed into the space of the former yard on the west and south sides of that existing house. The result is that the newly created lots are out of character with the historic development pattern of the neighborhood. The proposed new lots do meet all the development standards for the R2.5 zone, with the exception of 33.66 200C minimum lot width. You've already heard about that from staff. And that minimum lot width requirement states that each lot must be at least 36 feet wide. The proposed lot widths have been reduced in this case in order to shoehorn the two newly created lots around the existing house. Our observations of houses recently built on narrow lots are, again, that they tend to be built to the maximum height allowed and also out to the maximum setbacks. Therefore, we anticipate that the existing house will be overshadowed by the homes on the new properties to the south and to the west, and that all the charm of that existing house, designed to fit comfortably in the space of that original lot, will be destroyed. Further, that the original house and lot are an integral part of a special place in our neighborhood, an intersection comprised of a cluster of historic houses. We are devastated by this threat to a valued corner of our neighborhood. We submit that somehow more attention must be paid to the context of newly created infill development. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner? Before questions, I need to interject on the record, since you'd asked me to do so in the middle of testimony. So there are a number of documents in the folder. The first is a zoning map, which is in the record. The second is a site plan, which is also currently in the record. There is, following a petition of numerous pages, that's dated July 30th, which is subsequent to the hearings officer's hearing, so that's clearly doesn't belong in the record.
Okay,
and then it's my understanding, there's three pages of pictures. It's my understanding that these particular pictures are not in the record at this time. I conferred with staff and with the applicant, and they're not aware of these pictures having been in the record. So it would be appropriate for council to
disregard the petitions and the photos?
Specifically reject these as being part of the record.
Okay. Please. If there's no objection, we will disregard the petitions and the additional photographs submitted.
I have a question for Ms. Griffiths, and that is, would the neighborhood prefer that the house be demolished and have three of more lot sizes that are more compatible with the neighborhood?
That's an excellent question, and we have discussed it, and I have to say there's not consensus about that. Some people would prefer that. That's about the best I can do. We have really discussed it. Yeah.
Obviously, that's not related to the approval criteria either, but I just wanted
know. It was a predictable question.
We're talking about the character of the neighborhood, and if the issue is the size of the lot versus the character of the house. Thank you. I appreciate your answer.
Thank you, Ms. Griffiths. Okay, are there supporters of the appeal who wish to testify?
Yes, we have seven people signed up.
Okay, why don't you call the first three?
Are Marilee Spence, Les Zagethi, and Paul Aneshout. Did you sign up?
I certainly did.
Okay, I'm calling them in order. Who signed up? Sorry.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's Marilee, Les, and Paul are the first three.
Paul and Mary.
And then Becky, then Becky, Marianne, and Mary Kay, and then Len will be next.
Okay, welcome. You each have 3 minutes, and all you have to do is just give us your name.
Okay. My name's Marilee Spence. I'm opposed to the proposed lot division because it is not compatible with the surrounding area. This area of Woodstock borders the East Moreland and Reed neighborhoods, both of which are predominantly zoned R5, with R7 in some areas. I was absolutely shocked to learn that 30-plus years ago, someone had seen fit to designate the zoning for this area as R2.5. I suspect that none of the residents at that time, and it is clear that none of the current residents, were aware that it had been zoned for that level of density. The actual current density for this lot and the contiguous blocks is closer to R7. To arbitrarily divide one lot to R2.5 density is a substantial change, and one that is clearly not compatible with the rest of the area. The hearing officer found the compatibility issue difficult since the zoning code does not define compatibility, even though it uses that term as a criterion. Why did he not consult the comprehensive plan to help assess compatibility? What do we have a comprehensive plan for if the Bureau of Development Services ignores it? There are no other lots nearby that are less than 50 feet wide, yet he found lots not meeting the required lot width of 36 feet to be compatible. There is no objective criterion that makes such a finding reasonable. The current comprehensive plan, section 12.6 on preservation of neighborhoods, should be used when evaluating applications for lot partitions. This current proposal is clearly in violation of all three objectives of that section, which include preservation of the positive qualities of the area to be developed, respect for the fabric of the neighborhood, and building on the attractive qualities that distinguish an area. Adding two new houses that will tower over an existing house and be much narrower than any of the other houses or lots in the area does not meet any of these objectives. This proposal is exactly the sort of development that Section 12.6 appears to have been written to address and discourage. Developers need to be required to demonstrate compliance with this section. As I alluded to earlier, the Bureau of Development Services takes the position that the only part of the comprehensive plan to which they adhere is the zoning designation. They claim they do not need to comply with any of the provisions in Section 12, urban design. If this is an appropriate position for the Bureau of Development Services to take, I don't understand why Portland has a comprehensive plan and why we are spending so much time and money working on a revision. Perhaps we should shelve the revision and redirect the funds being used towards fixing the streets. Thank you.
I just have a question. Thank you for your very thoughtful testimony. I'm assuming, Lindley, that it is not within our power to question the underlying zoning. That with a designation of that's in the code is what we're bound by. If 2.5 is authorized, then we have to accept that for purposes of the statutory interpretation.
That is correct. Okay. I mean, it's the comprehensive plan designation. This is a zone change to be in compliance with that comprehensive plan designation.
Okay. Sir, give us your name, and you have 3 minutes, and there's a clock right in front of you.
My name is Paul Anuschott, A-N-U-S-C-H-A-T. I live two doors east of 3936. I want to speak on the traffic issue. The Woodstock Neighborhood Association raised traffic concerns at the BDS hearing in June regarding parking congestion, narrow obstructed Reedway parking on the street nearby, and access from Cesar Chavez 39th up a substantial hill. The city traffic analyst stunningly discounted such concerns, essentially saying the plan was no big deal for traffic flow and safety needs. Further, with regard to traffic, there is a major adjacent arterial work on Woodstock, where retail expansion is going at full tilt in the coming months. This expansion will inevitably lead to increased traffic flow on the few paved streets near the retail area. The 3936 property is situated on a focal corner in both east-west and north-south routes that are alternative to Woodstock. We have some few paved streets nearby, such as the 3936 intersection, which allow a bypass to Woodstock, or from Woodstock, I should say, when there's congestion. No such bypass exists on the south side because so many streets are unpaved. Already, we see a flow of hurried side street traffic on our streets in order to avoid congested retail Woodstock as it is now. It's only going to get worse. Approval of the 3936 plan will exacerbate the problem on the site intersection directly as retail growth expands. Given the design of the 3936 and additional congestions, accidents, and injuries will surely result. Secondly, on the character of the neighborhood and compatibility, you've got the chart with the three varying lot sizes. I ask you to look at them. Do they make any sense in a neighborhood whose character involves an array of substantially uniform lot sizes, the overwhelming preponderance of which are within the minimum lot widths? None of these lots resemble any of the greater neighborhood lot dimensions. What is the result? A haphazard, crazy quilt subdivision of lines and borders. And to what end? I don't believe the neighborhood and many of the neighbors who signed the submitted petitions, which you're not going to look at, object to reasoned property renewal or the alterations that meet the needs of the city, the property owner, and the neighborhood. However, the current property owner has shown no direct interest in making his attentions compatible with the character of the neighborhood, nor with its security. I make this assertion in all seriousness, given the absolute and continuing neglect of the existing property these past many, many, many months. If this proposal is validated by the City Council, it sets a monumentally bad precedent regarding lot sizes, and it reflects a calculated indifference to relevant neighborhood concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, hi. Just give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Les Zigethy. I won't spell that because sometimes I can't myself. I come before you today to ask for your help. You will hear from my neighbors that this proposed project with its undersized lots is inappropriate and incompatible with the neighborhood. The hearing officer, who admitted to never having seen the property, would have to have had noticed that the proposed development has absolutely nothing in common with this block of large trees and 100-year-old houses. If our goal as a city is to plan on preserving existing neighborhoods and allowing compatible development, then this proposed project fails any test of those metrics. While this is all true, it is not the most important reason for you to not allow this appeal. You will also hear from my neighbors that this proposed development will totally block solar access for the remaining homes and its neighbors. The proposed development puts a 30-foot-tall skinny house on both the south and west sides of the remaining home. The residents of the remaining home will live in perpetual gloom, a situation none of us in this room would want for ourselves or our families. City staff would deny this, but it is true. However, it is not the most important part of this appeal. The pictures you have seen show a 7-foot-tall stone wall on Reedway Street that must be breached in order to create a driveway for one of the undersized lots. This creates a dangerous situation where someone walking on the sidewalk would be invisible to a driver backing down this steep tunnel to access a steep and already blind street. City staff at the previous hearing stated, "This is not so bad, you should see some of the driveways in the West Hills." I totally reject that this type of dangerous situation in the West Hills should be created here as our standard. If for no other reason than this poorly conceived and unnecessarily dangerous driveway, this proposed development should be denied. Despite all of these facts, none of the main reason why this project should be rejected. Here is the main reason the project should be denied. To quote Hillary Clinton from one of her books, "Change is inevitable, progress is not." I think all of my neighbors here understand that accommodations must be made as the city grows. The urban growth boundaries have come home to roost. We must grow from within, not by sprawl. I think it is fair to say that your predecessors confronted these types of situations. Those that sat in your places in past years were often confronted with the option of change or progress. Obviously, they made the right choices as evidenced by the attractive and desired neighborhoods that make up our city. This proposal must be rejected not so much for what it is, but for what it represents. An ill-conceived plan that is not compatible with the neighborhood is not progress. Accepting a plan that plunges an existing home into perpetual darkness is not progress. Accepting a dangerous driveway is not progress. This is your opportunity to help define what we will accept as a community as growth. This is your opportunity to make sure this change must be defined by progress. By denying this proposal, you would continue the example set by your predecessors that change is inevitable, but only if we insist on progress. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm under the wire.
So we have three more or four more?
Yes, we have five more. Next three are Becky Lewinning, Mary Kay Tetrault, and Len Norwitz.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And if you just give us your name, you'll have 3 minutes. There's a clock in front of you, and
okay.
Why don't we begin with you.
Okay.
My name is Rebecca Luning. Most people call me Becky. And I am here today to give testimony pertaining to the solar access question, which I believe you do have a handle on. And I just wanted to say that in the staff testimony a minute ago, she said something about the new lots being, the subdivided lots being on the north of or the east of the property, when in fact they are on the south and the west sides of that property. So anyway, according to BDS literature, the FAQ about solar access regulations, it states that Portland's solar access regulations encourage variation in the width of lots to maximize solar access for single-dwelling detached development and minimize shade on adjacent properties. The findings of BDS staff on the solar access approval criteria in their report of May 16th, which is supported by the hearings officer in his decision, however, ignore the fact that the subject proposal likely will result in serious loss of solar access from the south and from the west on the existing home on parcel one, and will also significantly block morning sun for the home on the adjacent property, which lies just below and to the west. You know, we would appreciate people actually coming into our neighborhood and looking at these proposed building sites in person, thinking about things like where the sun shines and how much light will be blocked if a lot is carved up in this way or that. In the absence of such consideration, I've submitted a photograph. This was in the previous record. I have added a better caption for that, which is attached to my testimony. And it's come to my attention that Portland solar access regulations really have no teeth, which puzzles me for a city that's so famous for its rainy days and for its, you know, has this green reputation. You would think that we would be doing everything in our power to preserve access to sunlight for as many residents as possible. As you probably all know, solar access is critical for people's mental health. It's really important for anyone who's an urban gardener interested in growing their own food. And there's a lot of people now who want to be generating solar power for themselves. My husband and I do all these things. We have a garden. I'm an active gardener. We've installed both solar PV and solar hot water systems, and they function very well here as long as you have decent access. When I saw this lot on Reedway, I noticed what a beautiful home it was, what a beautiful lot, the way it was set there, the way that it used the light, and to allow this subdivision will be a great loss. Many of the greatest features of that lot will be squandered. So please consider these solar access regulations very carefully. Thank you.
Okay. Luning, I very much appreciate your comments and indeed your letter. I agree with you that the solar access regulations have no teeth. They were gutted in the 1990s. I encourage you to participate in the comprehensive plan progress because we know a lot more now about climate change and efficiency than we did then, and hopefully we can put them back to the way that they were.
Well, I just want to say I really hope that the next comprehensive plan will lead to better code, but I'm also aware that these code changes take time, and we in Woodstock are being hit especially hard with these kinds of overly large developments that are shading people's adjacent homes and taking away privacy. And I would encourage the council to work with neighborhoods to find a way to address this before this comp plan process is completed.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not able to. That's the way the state land use laws go, is that it has to go through a planning process and go through the planning commission. So,
What about the moratorium on snout houses that was enacted in the 1990s? Wasn't that done between, what was that process?
We could go into that.
It's not I wish you would. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Jim?
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Kay Tatro, and I live at 3937 Southeast Reedway, my husband and I, in the house directly across the street from the property in question. I'd like to speak to preserving the historic character of one section of the neighborhood. Woodstock is a historic neighborhood, a mix of houses from the turn of the last century. to houses filled in after World War II, and particularly through the 1970s. The corner on which our house is located, the corner of Southeast 40th and Reed Way, is one of the most historic in the neighborhood. And you have in your packets images of the four houses on the corner. One is a property in question, and I'd like to just hold up our house on 3937 on the northwest corner, was built in 1929. The house on the northeast corner in 1905. You can see the character of those houses.
Are these the pictures that we're not supposed to be looking at?
Yeah.
Well, that is...
We're taken in June, though.
Should I stop showing you?
You should.
Okay. And one on the southeast, one on the northeast corner in 1905, and one on the southeast corner in 1916. And in addition, the house on the corner of Chavez, or 39th, and Reedway was built in 1911. So you have five houses built between 1905 and 1939 within sight of one another. Our house was originally on a city block that stretched from 39th to 40th on Reedway, but it was subdivided in the 70s. Three houses were built on Chavez between Reedway and Ellis, and it's taken more than 25 years to grow a green barrier between those houses and ours. A large canopy of trees on Reedway exists between 39th and 40th. And although the city has tagged the trees for preservation, I imagine that it would be unlikely, considering the garage and so on, that there weren't at least one of the trees to come down. I've been surprised at the number of cars that stop under those trees where the driver is talking on the phone, texting, resting, taking shelter from the shade. It seems to be a place in the neighborhood where people figured out they can stop and reflect for a moment. I write in the morning, and one morning I heard a heavy engine making a horrendous noise. I tried to ignore it, but I couldn't because it was so predominant. I went out to see what was the matter, and there was a huge black pickup sitting under one of the trees. And so the windows were up. I motioned to the owner of the pickup, like, What's this noise about? And he looked at me and he went, shh. And I said, we went back and forth, me telling him what, asking him what this noise about, and him saying, shh, shh. Finally, he rolled down his window and he said, shh, my daughter's sleeping. I'll be here only 10 more minutes. I needed a shady spot to park on such a hot, sunny day to keep my baby from waking. Well, having dealt with sleeping babies myself as a mother and as a grandmother, I understood and walked away. Thank you.
Thank you.
Greetings, Councilors Fishnovic, Fritz, Saltzman, and Mayor Hales, who's not here. My name's Len Norwitz. I live five houses down on the corner of Ramona and 40th. And I'm going last, I guess, for a political reason, in that I want to talk about politics here for a few minutes. We had a Labor Day picnic at our block just a few 4 days ago, where many of those petitions you're not looking at got signed. And we didn't invite any of you only because... that the issues that are being discussed around here are pretty incendiary. So I know the reason we're here is that a zoning plan set up in the 80s in anticipation of growth is now at odds with our world in 2014. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for that, the fact that this hearing is actually happening, because I know it doesn't happen always on these kinds of issues. I'm here to emphasize the issues of neighborhood livability, the conundrum we all have in the area of trusting our public officials and public workers, and then the idea of rewarding bad actors at a time when the public is fed up with the rhetoric around all three of these things. None of these answers we are producing these days are working well around the issue of trust, and I say we because I'm employed as a political staff person for a public employees union. We're all under a large microscope to do more with less and live up to ideals that we talk about and campaign on all the time. So are we talking or walking the talk? I know we've been hearing a little bit about what the zoning code says. What I want to respectfully submit is that this is a case of a speculator getting rewarded for laziness, greed, and disrespect. This property was bought 16 months ago, from my remembrance. Not a thing has been done to it. And his insistence on not meeting with the neighborhood association, I think, is getting all the kinds of response that you're hearing and have been hearing over the last few months. I think it's really important that we all do more, and and work toward that tender trust with the public. And I should know because many of you come in and we talk about how in your campaigns we can win the public over and how we need to focus on issues of wealth inequality and income inequality and issues of racial and ethnic and gender equity, which I know you're doing a lot of work on. What I'll close by saying is I think this partition is not about raising votes and wrestling with the things the city has to be focused on. I actually think it's sinking them. These units will not be affordable. For coming in with two more housing units, I think we're going to find ourselves, you know, running a lot of folks off and pissing a lot of folks off, which you're hearing about today. So we, the neighbors, will miss the folks who are leaving, and they've left a lot of other neighborhoods which we could list here. But in my last 15 seconds, I'm going to say I'd ask you to disallow this guy's efforts until he comes in and talks to the Neighborhood Association in a way where folks can be owning a decision about this property or properties like this. And I would encourage you to ask that to be happening in the future. Thanks.
Can I just respond to one point you made?
Sure.
I don't remember in 6 years someone making such a pointed argument about the quote-unquote politics of this proceeding. And I feel obliged to comment in two respects. One is, had any of us been invited to come to a Labor Day picnic and meet with the neighbors and discuss the issues and tour the property, we would have been disqualified from hearing this appeal. So I appreciate that you didn't invite us because it would have created a conflict that could not have been resolved, and it would have probably made it impossible to get a quorum of the council to hear the appeal. But the second thing is, we take our responsibilities on this council very seriously in land use matters. This is the most heavily regulated and prescribed area of the law we have three hats. We're legislators, we're administrators, and we're judges. And I appreciate you framing your argument in a larger context, but I'm going to respectfully push back and tell you that at the end of this hearing, once we've heard all the facts and all the arguments, and so far I would say this is one of the better hearings I've attended because of the thoughtfulness of the testimony and the presentation, our job is actually to follow the prescriptions that council gives us about what's the law and what we can and can't do. So again, I come with an open mind. We have not, the record has not been closed, and we have some deliberating to do. But I would resist the temptation to sort of politicize this part of our work. You can be critical of the code, the underlying zoning, history, but we are bound by what's before us, and we'll make our best judgment. But I think from your point of view, it's best to keep some of the politics out of this proceeding because I'm not sure historically neighborhoods have done as well as they could if it was politicized. So I just offer that.
You're not asking me for a response, but I just came to say I came to talk about politics. That's what I came to do. I live four doors down, and I think sort of entering it in may not be a part of the record, but it's something that I feel really strongly about.
You have the privilege to make the point that you want to make to us. I feel obliged to defend the integrity of this process because we try not to allow the politics of the moment to guide our actions. We are bound by the record and the legal framework that's before us.
I understand that fully.
Okay. Thank you. Were there any further supporters of the appeal? Okay.
We have possibly three more. We have Corinne Lyons, Jeff Crater, and this other person here.
Third one, or okay, last call for supporters of the appeal. Welcome. Just give us your name, and you each have 3 minutes.
I'm Corinne Lyons, and my house sits just west of the smallest proposed lot. And I would say that my lot is an R7, and most of the lots, as was mentioned earlier, are R5 and R7 in our neighborhood. The R25 zoning is not an argument here, and that's just what I want to bring up, is that this is an exception to the R25 because these lots are smaller than an R25 zone. So that is my number one objection to this, is that we're not arguing that they are asking to build a legal lot. They're asking to build an exception to the law lot. And I think when it came up that there's not going to be a garage on one of the lots because the house is too small, which it would be 22 feet wide, it's a little bit eye-opening with the other homes that are surrounding this existing lot for those to go up. I know that that can work in some situations, but it really does not work where we live. And maybe there is a different option. The owner of this lot has never once made any effort to work with the neighborhood in the way of trying to be compatible with our desires. And I have lived there for 18 years, and most of the neighbors have lived there for longer. So I just wanted to say, please respect our desire to keep our neighborhood friendly, and we are not against infill or development, but please keep it so that our neighborhood is not destroyed by this shoehorn of two houses being kind of squeezed in and taking the appeal out of our neighborhood. I would just ask that you stick with the R25 zone law and say, no, these are smaller than that, and it's not going to work here. So,
and if that was done, that would mean removing the house. Would that be your preference?
I've seen that done very close to our neighborhood, and some of my friends here would say no to that as well, but I've seen developers do that in a very tasteful way. Right within Eastmoreland neighborhood, which is just around the corner from us, we're above Reed Canyon, we're right above Reed College. And some developers have gone to great lengths to build homes that really complement the neighborhood. Okay. And what is going to happen here is in no way, shape, or form going to do that.
Thank you.
Just give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
I have a prepared statement. My name is Jeffrey Crater. I live and work as a self-employed general contractor. My CCB number is 83122. I've worked in the trades from 1986 after completion of my studies at the Pacific Northwest College of Art. I'm a carpenter and began remodeling homes in the Buckman neighborhood and Ladd's Addition. Since the year 2000, I have worked primarily with two developers, building and remodeling commercial structures, mid-century homes, and building infill projects. My testimony today is in large part due to the inspiration and the work of one Margaret Strong. Do you know Margaret Strong?
I believe I occupy the office that she once occupied.
Very good. I lived in Northwest Portland from 1984 to about 1987, and being an art student, I had privileges to go places and talk to people, and I was able to meet her and talk with her, and her spirit, her passion for citizen involvement and planning to make this town livable is unbelievable, and I haven't seen that since, and I wish I would see it. I oppose the hearings officer's decision to approve the lot proposal before you. The proposal results in two lots being of sub-minimum width. The two lots have no precedent within our neighborhood. The example cited in the report is an aberration created more than 70 years ago. It's something like somebody walking outside their house and looking both ways on their street and saying, my street is fine. Why do we need street revenue to repair the rest of the broken streets? This situation is not isolated. We live in a community. These two lots and the structures they prescribe have no relationship to any existing homes, historical or otherwise. They are completely incompatible. The structures being built will look foreign and ill-placed. When we remodel, we always begin with the motto, what can we do to make it better? And how can we respect what has already been? These taller than wider homes, placed at right angles to one another, will create a backstop to the existing home. The reality of this will diminish any possibility for this home to be reborn. This factor will be instrumental in reducing this home to demolition. It'll probably be replaced with two new tall and skinny houses.
Time is up.
That's it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that we'll now turn to the principal opponent, which is the applicant in this case, and the applicant will have 15 minutes. Welcome. You just give us your name, and you have 15 minutes.
Thank you, President Saltzman, members of the council. My name is Mike Robinson. I'm here on behalf of the applicant. What I'd like to do is divide my 15 minutes into two areas. I'm going to start by giving you testimony explaining why, in our opinion, the hearings officer's decision is a correct application of the law that you're bound to apply, why it is supported also by substantial evidence in the record. And then before I conclude, I'd like to respond to the testimony that you've heard today. I agree it's thoughtful. Most of the folks I encounter, even though they rarely agree with my clients, are often pretty thoughtful and polite about it. So I think it's appropriate to try and answer the questions that they've asked today, and I'll try and do that. And then lastly, before you close your hearing, if you have questions that I can answer, I invite you to ask me. I want to try and answer whatever you have in mind about this. So first of all, of course, we ask that you reject the appeal and affirm the hearings officer's decision. We think his decision is correct. It correctly applies the applicable approval criteria and is supported by substantial evidence. He relied to a large extent on the staff report and on the application. And I have to say, we agree with the staff report we've heard today. We think it was exceedingly well done, and it probably reduces the amount of time I need to speak by about 5 minutes. So I hope I can use the staff report to be a little more efficient today. What's before you is not a contest about the zoning in conformance with the comprehensive plan map designation of R2.5. The appeal expressly says they understand that that has to be approved. What's before you is the partition, and as a subset of that, the solar issue. So the first thing I want to note, and you certainly have this in the record before you, but just let me hold up the map again. This is a map from both the staff report and the hearings officer's decision. The hatched area, this is what I'm showing council, the hatched area is the site that's before you. It's surrounded by the area designated on the plan for R2.5 zoning in conformance with the plan. When you go east of 40th Avenue, then you get into an R5 area that's not designated for further zoning change. This area is surrounded by that change. That's a conscious decision that the city council's made, and that's why the zone map amendment is certainly appropriate. It's consistent with the plan. Secondly, the hearings officer correctly concluded that the application meets the code requirements for narrow lots. There are three parcels that are proposed, 1, 2, and 3. Parcels 2 and 3 are the narrow lots. If you want to look at a chart that's helpful in describing what's being proposed, it's on page 11 of the hearings officer's decision. Parcel 2 is proposed to be 33 foot wide. That's three feet of deviation. Parcel 3 is proposed to be 31.75 feet wide. That's 4.25 feet of deviation. And as the hearings officer noted on page 11 of his decision, neither of those parcels are particularly large deviations from what's required. They're frankly within what the city could have anticipated when it adopted this code.
Sir, let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
If the council did not agree with the deviation, what would your client's position be?
Well, I'm going to explain also that we believe, because you have to apply a compatibility standard to the deviation, Commissioner Fish, that is not a clear and objective standard, and were you to find that it's not compatible, we believe that would be an appropriate thing to appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals. If you didn't appeal with the deviation, and if LUBA didn't reverse the council, then the choice might be to tear down the house and do 3 or 4 lots that meet the standard. But the record reflects that it's the applicant's desire to save that house. No one is proposing removing the house. Did I get anywhere close to answering what you were asking?
Oh, that was helpful. Thank you.
So I thought what the staff report did really well is explain that this is a sort of a cascading analysis that you have to apply in terms of the approval criteria. And out of all these approval criteria, there's really only two that are issues. So if I can just refer to them, the first thing you have to find is that, as the hearings officer did, this application is consistent with the standards for narrower lots. There are six of those found in 33611.200.C2, A through F. The only one that is issue is sub A, which provides, on balance, the proposed lots will have dimensions that are consistent with the purposes of the section. So before I tell you what the next section is, note the language on balance. This is not a criterion that requires you to find that each purpose statement is met. It expressly provides balancing, and there's ample case law in the state about what balancing means. So in this case, I simply note that a prior council saw fit to include the phrase on balance, which means you're balancing all of these purpose statements. And that takes you to the next section. By the way, that's out of those six approval criteria for narrower lots, this is the only one that's challenged. That takes you to the purpose statement for the section, which is 33611200A, that has nine purpose statements. Out of that, again, only one is challenged. It's the ninth. And that requires that lots are compatible with existing lots while also considering the purpose of this chapter. So again, the instruction of this code is you look at compatibility with existing lots from the lots that are proposed. So maybe it's appropriate for me to stop here. We're not looking at compatibility with dwellings or what's proposed to be constructed. In fact, you won't find in the record what's going to be constructed because we don't, it's not part of the approval criteria, therefore it's not part of the application. What's required, what the hearings officer correctly did, was determine that these lots are compatible with existing lots while also considering the purpose of the chapter, which is 33611. And then you get to that last section, and that's the purpose statement for that chapter. Here's the relevant language. These requirements ensure that lots are consistent with the desired character of the zone. So let me stop there. The analysis, again, is not the desired character of the neighborhood or the historic character of the neighborhood. Having said that, I appreciate what these folks had to say about that, but I am bound to tell you what the law requires, and it's very clear. It's not an analysis of the character of the neighborhood or the historic character in the neighborhood or an impact on houses. It's these requirements ensure that lots are consistent with the desired character of the zone while allowing lots to vary in size and shape, provided the planned intensity of the zone is respected. The reason the hearings officer ultimately found this satisfied and the purpose section satisfied and the standard for narrow lots satisfied is that this application does exactly what the purpose of this chapter and this section requires. It's compatible with existing lots, and it allows lots to vary in size and shape. That's why you have the narrower lot provision, and it provides that the planned intensity of the zone is respected. Ms. Whiteside noted in her staff report that whereas this site would be capable of accommodating four lots under the R2.5 zone, this applicant has requested only three. Part of that, again, is to allow the preservation of the existing dwelling. I thought, Commissioner Fritz, your questions about whether folks would propose that, prefer that or not, were appropriate. I've heard some ambiguity on what the answers might be, but from the applicant's perspective, we think it's a house worth leaving there, and that's why we're proposing only three lots instead of four. And we need to use the narrower lot standards to make two of the three lots slightly more narrower. So when you look at the criteria, we meet the standards for the narrower lot because we meet the purpose statement of the section. We meet the purpose statement of the chapter, because it is consistent with the desired character of the zone, which is a more intense zone with smaller lots, while allowing lots to vary in size and shape. And we provide for the intensity of the zone. That, in a nutshell, is why the hearings officer found this application to provide substantial evidence and determine that it could be approved. Now,
Mr. Robinson, thank you for addressing that. I do apologize that I have to leave. I will be reviewing the record so that I can participate
thank you.
In the vote.
So,
can I ask you a question, sir?
Yes, sir.
We sometimes interpret and apply code that is very prescriptive and has an objective.
Yes.
Quality, and other sections of the code to me seem to have a more subjective quality where we're required to balance a number of factors. This section about on balance the proposed lots will have dimensions that are consistent with the purpose of the section. Would you agree that that's more of a subjective standard and that we are, in effect, called upon to do the balancing?
I would agree it's subjective, and without waiving any rights, Commissioner Fish, that's why we argued in a letter that is part of the record before the hearings officer that that is among four or five sections of this code that may not be